We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Dynasty Tradecast on RotoViz Radio, brought to you by the Blue Wire Network. And we can say it, folks, week one is in the books as I am in your ear holes. The week one of the fantasy football season is done. And in case the Ravens or Raiders do something crazy tonight, we haven't seen it yet. So
Don't ruin it for us.
Yes, no spoilers on what the Raiders and the Ravens game looks like 3 days from now. All right, joined by the one and only Dan Sainio. Are you excited to chop up week one, my friend?
Very excited. A lot of hills that I chose to die on that ended up being correct. A lot of other hills that I ended up being wrong on. So is it the way we want fantasy football season and regular football season to start? Lots of exciting news and. Yeah, it's fun to just be able to have these real conversations where it actually matters rather than just all speculation and guessing. We now have numbers. We have some good tape. And yeah, let's get into it.
All right. So we're going to start off our show on the West Coast team that played the Detroit Lions. Actually, we're starting off with back-to-back topics. From this game, we have first the 49ers backfield. When the weekly inactives came out, we had Trey Sermon announced as a healthy scratch, which is certainly a surprise. You know, many people saw him as possibly the RB1 in San Francisco. And kind of the more surprise there was that the seventh rounder running back for San Francisco that I'm now blanking on his name as I'm talking.
Elijah Mitchell.
Elijah Mitchell, sixth rounder, seventh, whatever. Elijah Mitchell got the healthy, you know, playing as opposed to Trey Sermon. So that was kind of like, oh, like the antenna went above, like, oh, that's interesting in as far as Mitchell. And then of course Raheem Mostert, as Raheem Mostert does on days that end in Y. Raheem Mostert suffered a major injury. He is out now for several weeks, if not the whole year, and Elijah Mitchell, with that opportunity, blew up. I think he had about 96 yards and a touchdown. And so certainly impressive in his debut. So what is the biggest news here? The Trey Sermon healthy scratch, the Mostert injury, or Mitchell's big game?
Well, the biggest news is that Shanahan offenses are still hashtag good. I don't think that's ever going to change. And I honestly don't think it really matters who that running back is. Now, whether or not they stay healthy is kind of what we've been hoping for, to try to get a little bit of consistency out of this backfield over the last few years. This year looks like it's going to be no different. And to be honest, the Elijah Mitchell news, I'm not super surprised by. There was a lot of really, really smart analysts, a lot of guys that, you know, when they drop their rankings or, you know, some form of article, an ear article, whatever it happens to be, I listened, and a lot of people liked Elijah Mitchell out of Louisiana, thought he could really, really be a decent fantasy sleeper, especially because of the landing spot. And they actually liked the tape of him coming out. I didn't really get enough time to dive into what is a sixth rounder, but from what I saw, and yes, it is the Lions, he looked pretty good. He obviously has a pretty good grasp of the system. Everything kind of was there in front of him, and he took what was there. I don't necessarily think he's special, but again, it's a Shanahan offense. It's built for running backs. It's built for moving the football. This is good. Now, the Trey Sermon bit, I think it's the you're going to earn your spot. We want to, you know, you're not just going to be given anything. I think it's more that than Trey Sermon not getting it or whatever that happens to be. Maybe he's not 100% healthy, and they're just using that as a, you know, a ploy. They've been known to hide injuries in the past. But we'll see. I don't think this is ever really going to be a true, you know, like bell cow situation unless they go out and spend big on a running back or bring in a big name. I see this as just kind of consistently being a committee backfield because it's just kind of how the Shanahan offense is run.
And as we do on this show, I'm taking a dive into the RotoViz box score scout for Elijah Mitchell. Some names that you probably haven't heard of. You have Jordan Kinzeri, Ian Johnson. Remember Ian Johnson? He's the guy who proposed after the Statue of Liberty play.
Michael Gordon. I will never forget that. Trust me. Never forget that one.
Michael Gordon, Patrick Jackson. So a bunch of no names, but that will usually happen when we have these late draft capital. Guys, I think that the biggest news here is the scratch itself, though. I think you might be underplaying it a little bit. I think that one of the two either shows how good Mitchell is or how bad Sermon has been, you know, in the shadows. Because Mitchell is the one who got, you know, the first, I mean, Sermon's the one who got the first / second team snaps in the preseason game. So you kind of expected, like, okay, this is going to be the guy that's going to be the number two. And then on game day, he's just a healthy scratch. So it's either a huge negative indicator for him or, like you said, maybe they're for some reason turning a injury into a healthy scratch, which doesn't make much sense.
No, and you would think that that's not how that's going to work, but I think it's more so you're going to earn this spot, but now they're probably just going to be forced into at least giving Trey Sermon the backup role, because I think we can agree that whatever Jamichael Hasty is isn't going to be anything. And their other hodgepodge group of running backs is not going to be getting a hand in the offense. Kyle Juszczyk is just your fullback. He's essentially going to be playing halfback, you know, or tight end or just blocking. He's not going to be a legit part of the offense. So they're going to keep Elijah Mitchell involved. I think this might be a James Robinson type season, unless Trey Sermon does prove that he is what we kind of think he is. I don't think Raheem Mostert is ever going to stay healthy long enough to take over. And I think that they'll just continue to go with whatever the hot hand is in between Elijah Mitchell and Trey Sermon, assuming Trey Sermon is just the, you're not going to just be handed the keys. You have to earn this. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. And I think that with this Niners backfield, which is how it's been pretty much since Shanahan got there, is that there is going to be Mitchell weeks, there's going to be Sermon weeks, there's going to be Hasty weeks, and I think that it's going to be hard to predict on a week-to-week basis, but they're all going to have big explosion weeks where it's like 30 points, like hopefully it's not on your bench. If I'm buying one of these guys, I think I'm going to lean towards Sermon just because of the draft capital, but I don't think I have Mitchell anymore. If I do, I'm not trying to sell, because I do think that James Robinson, you know, Chris Carson from a few years ago, like that's a possible outcome for him.
Yeah, and I think he's shown, I mean, he showed Sunday that he's good enough, but I think even in his tape coming out of college, the little bit that I did see, the articles that I read, you know, the podcasts that I listened to, a lot of people liked Elijah Mitchell. They thought it was a good landing spot, and he showed enough as a prospect to have some legit upside. So I'm excited to see more. I'd like to see him go against an actual defense instead of the Detroit Lions. But, you know, we go with what we go with.
Now let's move on from the 49ers backfield to the 49ers receiving core, the wide receivers, the targets that Jimmy Garoppolo and eventually Trey Lance have. Dan, this might have been the drum that me and to an extent you as well were beating all offseason long. I don't understand the price gap between Brandon Ayuk, fourth, fifth round, and Deebo Samuel, eighth, ninth round. I didn't understand it in February. I didn't understand it in May. And I didn't understand it in August. And guess what? The Niners didn't understand it on September 12th.
Well, I think that maybe we didn't get the full, the full share of news on Ayuk's injury, because it sounds like it maybe was injury related rather than being relegated to the bench as Trey Sermon was. But like you mentioned, there was absolutely no reason for Deebo Samuel to be a couple rounds later than Brandon Ayuk. These two should have been going back to back. They should have been in the ballpark of like the Pittsburgh Steelers wide receivers,
the Broncos wide receivers.
You know, that's kind of the group we want to keep, because I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo is a fine quarterback. He's slightly above replacement level, but he's kind of a career backup. If you believe in any of the upside of Trey Lance, these two should have been flying up your list. And only Brandon Ayuk really did, even though we've seen Deebo produce pretty significantly. And we saw Brandon Ayuk do it a little bit as a rookie, which is always promising. But we now have two seasons of Deebo Samuel, even though one of them was a little bit limited, we know he can play. We know how they're going to use him. They're going to get him the ball. Defense is just like we saw what kind of Detroit's plan was, is really to take away Kittle. They said, we're not going to let Kittle beat us. If you're going to beat us outside, beat us down the field, make your wide receivers make plays, because if you get the ball into Kittle's hands, he's just going to rough up your defense. Just like how Travis Kelce does, what we see with Darren Waller, Mark Andrews, the tight ends that are legit are going to just tear apart defenses if you let them. Defenses and defensive coordinators seem to think that they have a better chance of going one-on-one with their corners versus your wide receivers than they do against a linebacker and a safety going against George Kittle. So these wide receivers are going to eat. I think now we'll prop Deebo probably back up to where he should be and maybe slide Ayuk just a touch. But honestly, I think kind of where Ayuk was going is really where Deebo should probably have been going. And they're both worthy of a spot in that top 50 area, in my opinion. I would just like to see Ayuk healthy and getting the targets, but this offense is going to be special if they can all be healthy and start to put this thing together.
And from like a week-to-week starting perspective, I do think that Ayuk, whether it's from health or a role or whatever it might be, you kind of have to wait to get burned by leaving him on the bench. Like, there's going to be a week you put him on the bench and he scores, 24, and you'll have to live with that and then start him the next week. Because I don't think you can be confident in putting Ayuk in your lineup until he shows that he's going to have a role, because he just didn't. Whether it's from injury or not, it's not good that he didn't have a role in week one.
Yeah, and the soft tissue stuff, because I think originally it was a hamstring with Ayuk, if I'm not mistaken. We've seen guys like Sammy Watkins, who one soft tissue and like it just lingers forever. And there's never the same. So I hope that's not what we get with Brandon Ayuk. Hopefully it was just precautionary to keep him out. Maybe, he ran a route pregame or did something, early where they just didn't feel comfortable, pushing him. So,
and they were playing the Lions, who they knew they were going to boat race. Granted, the Lions made it a game at the end, but
somehow scored three touchdowns in like a minute and a half or whatever it was.
All right. Now let's talk about those Lions really quickly. Let's talk about slightly before game time. There was a blurb that came out that basically Jamal Williams is the Detroit RB1 and then Swift is the 1B. And you tweeted me the D-Toilet Lions, which is not incorrect, but you were doing so in my reference to my affinity for one DeAndre Swift from a fantasy perspective. And
versus my affinity for Jamal Williams.
Yes, as well. You were wrong about Swift being detoileted, because he is still productive, still making big plays, albeit in quote unquote garbage time. But it looks like both these guys, both Williams and Swift, are fantasy relevant. And in kind of what we saw in week one is that Swift is the ceiling play and Williams is the guy who's going to probably get you like 10 to 12 points every week.
So I think the takeaway here that it's not about being wrong or being right, one being bad, one being good. Jamal Williams is a problem for DeAndre Swift. He absolutely caps his ceiling, but I don't think in any way he moves DeAndre Swift's floor. I think both of these guys have a relatively high floor, and I, to be honest with you, think they're going to continue to use a good mix of both of them, especially in the passing game, because both of them looked pretty good catching passes. Obviously, DeAndre Swift, that's, in my opinion, what he excels at, and they'd be stupid not to use him more there. I really think between the tackles, Jamal Williams is an adequate, you know, he's good. He's no slouch. I know people want, oh, Aaron Jones and now DeAndre Swift. Jamal Williams is a hell of a football player. I loved him coming out of college. I wish he would have gotten a fair shake to be a one somewhere. And, you know, he gets stuck with Aaron Jones, who is a pretty darn good running back. And now he gets an elite college talent in DeAndre Swift, who is good. I don't think he's elite at the pro level, but I think he is very good. I just have a real problem with DeAndre Swift's price compared to what his ceiling actually is, considering the fact that Jamal Williams isn't going anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, you could make a, there's a difference in the argument, but you can make a similar argument to my Debo Ayuk take that you could say, why is Jamal Williams 10 rounds later than DeAndre Swift? That's probably an over-exaggeration. But, you know, 7 to 8 rounds ahead of Jamal Williams.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have draft capital and all of that to think about when in DeAndre Swift's, you know, Debo and Ayuk both were pretty highly sought after, yeah, and valued that way. So, you know, the Lions made a point to go get Jamal Williams. This wasn't just like let's get him for vet minimum and see if he makes the team. No, they had plans for Jamal Williams. It's very clear that he was always going to have a role in the offense, especially considering how atrocious these wide receivers are. This offense, it runs through TJ Hockenson, through DeAndre Swift, and through Jamal Williams. As crazy as that sounds, these are your three playmakers right now, and that's not going to change until they spend high draft capital on a wide receiver.
All righty, let's move on to our next topic, which is 72% completion percentage, 403 passing yards, 3 touchdowns, and 13 rushing yards. We have Dak Prescott is hashtag back. Dak is back. You and I were never afraid of Dak being back. Put this in a Dr. Seuss book. but certainly any sort of worries about the knee, and granted, Dak is never going to be the guy he was when he was younger, where he was running for 300, 400 yards a year. That's never happening again. But that isn't because of the injury. That's because of his receiving core.
He doesn't need to.
Yeah, so Dak, huge. Cowboys, clearly, one of my detractors to Dak preseason was that maybe the Cowboys offense won't be absolutely putrid. But the results are in. Cowboys defense, it's putrid. So Dak Prescott and his 58 pass attempts, there's going to be more where that's coming. His shoulder's going to be sore by the end of the year with 17 games, but huge for fantasy. He's going to be a top three quarterback at minimum if he stays healthy.
You know, you say Dak is back. I say he never left. Sure, he was injured, but when you have this amount of just unreal weapons, you're never going anywhere. He looked really good. I was pretty happy with what I saw. And, you know, the defense is putrid, but when you're going against a Tom Brady-led offense that also happens to have a significant number of weapons, I would like to see what they do against just an average offense. Tampa Bay, Dallas, those are two probably top three or four offenses in the entire league. So, but going back to Dak, he looked great. He still has the weapons. They're going to be throwing it a lot. I would imagine, you know, obviously 60 probably isn't realistic. I would hope not, or his arm might fall off. But, you know, any games like this that are going to be shootouts, man, this offense is going to show its teeth. They're going to put up pretty massive numbers. It's fun to see Amari and CD both show up with huge games. Would have liked to have seen Gallup get a few more looks. He only got 7 targets compared to Amari Cooper's 16 and CD Lamb's 15. So obviously we know where Dallas and Dak feel as in terms of wide receivers go. But, Yeah, I mean, Dak's going to make a push for one of those top couple spots in dynasty rankings at your QB position. Obviously, you have to have Mahomes at one, but the rest is kind of up for grabs. And to be honest with you, I think Dak makes a damn good case to be number two.
Yep, for sure. So any other positives from week one for the Cowboys? Is there one guy you're having stock up? I mean, we were reminded that Amari Cooper, when he gets going, is arguably the best wide receiver in the NFL.
Well, and that's the thing, that, you know, the Cowboys have two elite wide receivers, not just one, not what people think is CeeDee Lamb. A lot of people still don't think Amari Cooper is good, which I will never grasp. This was an elite prospect.
Daniel, you are one of the people who still thinks Mike Evans is bad, so you can't
He's very mediocre. He uses his size. He's a 50-50 guy. Amari Cooper is an elite route runner. He can separate. He can play any one of the wide receiver positions. Everything you could possibly want, including production, is there. And people are still detractors. People were saying sell all offseason. Same with CeeDee Lamb, which also I don't get. You have two elite wide receivers. You have a good, that used to be great, running back in Ezekiel Elliott. And you still have probably the best wide receiver three, except for maybe the Bucs and Antonio Brown. I guess maybe Mike Evans is their wide receiver three now. So, Michael Gallup, Mike Evans. It's the battle of the mics for top wide receiver three in the NFL, up there with probably Chase Claypool, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Anyways, it's you can buy all of them. You might even be able to buy the tight ends. They're getting 6, 5, 6, 7, 8 targets too. This offense is going to have to throw because, like you said, defense, not good. But in games where they absolutely are overpowering the other team, just on their from their offensive perspective, the defense won't have to do as much. They'll be able to relax. They'll be able to just play the pass, not have to worry about the run, which they didn't have to worry about the run with Tampa. But when you have Brady and those, you know, Gronk and all the wide receivers, even though the running backs had a little bit of a hand in the passing game too, that is a little bit different for the defense. So I just think this offense is, you know, the arrow is pointed vertically. It's not even aiming north. It's vertical. It's a vertical lineup.
Speaking of getting vertical, let's hear about ourselves, RotoViz.
I just want to take a second to thank you for tuning in to today's show. My name is Colin Kelly, co-host of the RotoViz Overtime Podcast, along with the great Sean Siegel. We do appreciate each and every listener, and as a thank you to each of you, you can get yourself a 10% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass. We're heading at full speed towards the season. Make sure you're ready. Get yourself access to all the content and tools up on the RotoViz website. All you have to do is add the code RVRadio2021 at checkout to get yourself that 10% discount. Now let's go and dominate those fantasy leagues in 2021.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error. Get the Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Alrighty, let's get back into the show. Our next one. So with Dak being back, Corey Davis is hashtag good. Not sure why those two are connected other than the last two topics on the spreadsheet. Corey Davis, the Jets, granted, not surprisingly, looked pretty bad in the first half and pretty bad overall. But Zach Wilson and the Jets offense showed some signs in the second half, along with Corey Davis having himself a huge, huge day, which is definitely a positive indicator. He's gaining that trust from the rookie early on. They're going to be a team that has to pass when they're playing a quarterback that's better than Sam Darnold. And so, yeah, I think arrows pointing up for one Corey Davis and Elijah Moore as well. I think both these guys are going to be a solid pairing for their prices in Dynasty right now.
Yeah, Elijah Moore had a tough go of it with only a few targets, and I think he only had one catch for like negative 5 yards or something. But yeah, Corey Davis looked good. I wish I would have seen more from Zach Wilson. You know, that offensive line is so bad that he just really didn't have the time to be able to throw. You know, this could be David Carr all over again, where all the potential in the universe, but they're just going to let him get killed back there. And then they're going to inevitably move on because they don't think he can handle the pressure, even though their offensive line is essentially just blocking pads. You have Corey Davis, you have Elijah Moore. I think those are really nice pieces to build off of. The backfield is pretty slim pickings. I know a lot of people like Michael Carter. I've always been a fan of Tevin Coleman, but I think he's kind of past his usability. Ty Johnson is just another guy. And then you look at the back end of the receiving core, Denzel Mims, who I think everybody's out on. Braxton Berrios became a thing after a couple of years. So I don't know. It's going to be one of those things where you're probably just chasing volume. I still think Corey Davis is really good. It's a tough situation. You got a rookie quarterback with no offensive line and a horrendous defense. So at the very least, there should be some volume. But when you play a bad team like Carolina, you really don't have the opportunity to run a lot of plays. So hopefully we'll see things, you know, get a little uptick from offensive play standpoint. And maybe they try to hone in some of these targets. Zach Wilson targeted a significant number of players with multiple targets, and only Corey Davis and Braxton Berrios had 7 each, and then Ryan Griffin had 6. So I'd like to see that Corey Davis target number get up to like that 10 range pretty consistently. But he was very, very efficient with it. He went 5 for 97 and 2 scores. So that's a positive. Obviously, the 2 touchdowns is a number that's going to regress. I would guess he'll probably end the season with like 6. So it's a pretty
absolutely not. No, listen, no, hold on. Corey Davis, somewhat surprising as I have his career numbers in front of me. If you would have asked me what Corey Davis's like career high in touchdowns would have been, I would have guessed like 8, 9. His career high touchdowns is 5, which was last year in only 14 games. So I think that he is going to smash his career high very soon.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see finally we get the positive regression to into that 8 to 10 to 12, dare I say, touchdowns. The issue is we need to get the Jets to the red zone or they need to make big plays. I'm not sure I see either one of those things happening.
But like I said, I do think that it's a big thing for Corey Davis to have that trust very early on. Not that Zach Wilson has a bunch of options to decide who to trust.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, they got that rapport going early on. Next, we have the tight end position with Juwan Johnson. Now, Dan, every year there are these wide receiver tight ends. There are these random sleepers that I hear about like 2 weeks before the season starts. And basically, I pick and choose like some, like I'm all in and I have like on 19 of my 19 rosters. And the others, I'm just like, I don't have the time to even think about who that is. Juwan Johnson fell in the category of I didn't have time to even think about who that was until I saw him on Red Zone, scoring 2 touchdowns, he only had 3 catches for 21 yards, but 2 trips to the end zone in week 1 with his man, Jameis Winston, at the helm. Granted, Jameis threw for like 156 yards and 5 touchdowns. So nobody was getting any sort of receiving yards from Jameis Winston. But this does show that he is a red zone option. He is going to be a guy who Jameis trusts in the red zone. Juwan Johnson, not a guy I am going to try and buy in Dynasty. I think that he's a fine, you know, waiver wire pickup if you have some fab that you want to blow on him. But he's not a guy that I am – I hate to brag on him on his birthday, actually. Today's his birthday. Happy birthday, Juwan, but I am not buying you in Dynasty.
Yeah, I think the only player in New Orleans you really should be buying is Alvin Kamara. I mean, sky's the limit there. He's got all the opportunity and really no, you know, no one challenging him for any looks. Juwan Johnson, you know, the first time I heard the name after the first touchdown, I thought, wow, didn't that guy used to play basketball? I thought Juwan Howard. But turns out it's Juwan Johnson. He plays for the
New Orleans. Juwan Howard's like 80 years old.
I trust me. I know. I was like, that seems strange. But yeah, everyone's favorite Marquez Callaway, who was new wide receiver one, did really well. He was good. Glad you guys all spent first round picks on him. Those were definitely worth it. Deontay Harris, also just kind of a flash in the pan guy. There's just really nothing here. I think if you could get a cheap flyer on Michael Thomas, who is cheap relative to potential wide receiver one, I think that's probably your only other option as far as buying goes. If you are in need of tight end, though, you could use the Juwan Johnson hype to go get Adam Trautman for cheaper. He doubled Juwan Johnson in targets and had essentially the same performance, catching 3 passes for something like 20 yards. He just didn't catch the 2 touchdowns. So Juwan Johnson has no dynasty relevance, in my opinion, whereas Adam Trautman, to me, probably does. I think he's a decent tight end, too. A really nice guy just kind of have as your secondary tight end in case one of the main guys goes down.
All right, let's move on to our next topic, which is the Bengals offense. The Bengals offense is a team that we touted as, you know, a possible quote-unquote like 2020 Dallas, you know, a breakout young offense, putting things together. And for the most part, it lived up to the hype after 1 week. It did take them 5 quarters to do so, but Ja'Marr Chase looks like the stud Ja'Marr Chase was in 2019. Tyler Boyd looks like as reliable as he's always been. And T. Higgins showed that the Ja'Marr Chase pick does not scare his fantasy value whatsoever.
Yeah. Joe Mixon, it was really nice to finally see just like a strong game. He looked good all game, whether he was catching passes or between the tackles. He looked how I've been expecting Joe Mixon to look. And, this year he looks significantly more poised in my opinion. Joe Burrow, I think early on looked a little bit shaky, but as the game went on, you kind of saw the legs get back underneath him. That offensive line is still pretty bad. And, you know, Burrow kind of, he ate some of those sacks when he definitely could have got rid of the ball, held on to it too long. And that'll just, you know, come with more gameplay. Again, he's coming off the injury and has really limited usage. So that's all just kind of part of it. But the wide receivers kind of went how I thought they would go. I thought maybe we'd see a little bit more through the air, but Cincinnati really just kind of depended on the run. They ran the ball 36 times and only threw it 27. So That's a pretty weird breakdown, in my opinion. I think that'll shift as game scripts change a little bit, but it went how I kind of thought it would. I figured Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins would kind of be the 1-2 combo. And Tyler Boyd is, again, we talk about these wide receiver threes, a great wide receiver three. I just don't think the volume is going to be there for a fourth option, because I do think Joe Mixon's going to demand more from the offense than a Tyler Boyd would. But, yeah, overall, a pretty solid performance. I wouldn't say great. The really nice thing to see was Joe Mixon being efficient with his looks. And I'm gonna give Ja'Marr Chase one more week before I say he looks like that guy, because his touchdown, Bashaud Breeland was caught sleeping. He was expecting help over the top. It wasn't there. That was free. So busted coverage. I want to see Ja'Marr Chase beat somebody. He didn't really beat those wide receivers much that game. aside from the one broken play where it looked like he beat him, but Breland was just playing soft for some reason. I want to see him use his tools because I know that they're there. He looked good, but at the same time, the speed of the game didn't really seem like it was there for him.
And two interesting tidbits about the Bengals with, so obviously everybody wanted them to take Penei Sewell to protect Joe Burrow. And Kevin Cole, formerly of RotoViz, now at PFF, pulled up two statistics that I thought were very interesting in terms of how they're protecting Joe Burrow outside of just the players themselves. So he cited that Joe Burrow had the sixth lowest game neutral play action rate. Basically, he had the sixth fewest play actions in 2020. And in 2021, week one, he had 58% as opposed to 33%. So second highest in the NFL in week one, protecting the quarterback by that play action buys them some time. And then the other one, which I thought was nuts, Joe Burrow dropped back in an empty formation more often than any quarterback in 2020, 27.3. So empty formation a quarter of the time. And they dropped that number from 27.3 to 9.1, which was seventh lowest. So once again, not protecting a quarterback by having even the threat of a blocker in the form of running back or even the threat of a running game. Basically, they were exposing Joe Burrow last year. And they're kind of like covering up some of that exposure in the first game of 2021.
Yeah, I mean, the defense is going to get free licks as it is because of how bad that offensive line is. But when you leave him empty like that and you split everybody out or remove the, you know, Joe Mixon from the backfield or Samaje Perine as your lead blocker, that's not going to bode well for Joe Burrow. He could end up having that Zach Wilson type, David Carr type, even Andrew Luck type because of the actual hype. Andrew Luck got beat up back there, and I would hate to see a high-end prospect like Joe Burrow go to waste. Because this offense could be very good if they can keep him protected.
And we will wrap up the show with a pair of players that I do not have on very many fantasy rosters. It pains me to say, but it is the Philadelphia Eagles. It is their top two wide receivers, Devonta Smith and Jalen Reagor. Devonta Smith, 71 yards and a touch. And Jalen Reagor, 49 yards in a touch. You and I have been trashing Jalen Hurts all offseason, and he went for 264 and three touchdowns. Granted, it was against the Atlanta Falcons. That's the big caveat, the Atlanta Falcons. Let's see what they do against a team that's not the Atlanta Falcons. But Jalen Hurts and these two young wideouts looked much better than expected entering the season.
Yeah, and you said it. I mean, Atlanta has no pass rush. They have no secondary. I think they have one linebacker that's still healthy. It's a gong show in Atlanta. So it was nice to see these guys perform aside from Miles Sanders, who hopefully everyone sold. But it's hard to love the upside here. I thought Devonta Smith actually played pretty well. Jalen Reagor was just essentially catching everything underneath and taking the easy stuff, which I don't hate at all. I think if he can get 5, 6, 8 targets, bubble screens or slants or outs or whatever it is, and just to get him going, he can do more down the field, but get him the ball, get him some work. I think we know Devonta Smith can be explosive and be a playmaker. The worry always with him was the size. I think he showed pretty well. Not a crazy amount of volume here, but it was a blowout essentially the whole game. So we wouldn't really expect a ton of passing offense through Philly. So I was fortunate enough to get a few shares of Devonta Smith only because of how far he kept falling. And he was getting to the point where it was like, do I take Devonta Smith or Kadarius Toney? I'm going to go with Devonta Smith. Thank you. I like the upside. I still don't think Jalen Hurts is very good, but if they play Atlanta every week, this could be fun offense.
Unfortunately, they do not play Atlanta every week. So we'll see how the Eagles and Hurts play in a world that isn't the Falcons defense. Let's see, who do they play this coming week? I'm pulling it up right now. We have the 49ers.
This should be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the 49ers defense looked competent for, you know, the first three quarters and then gave up 87 points in the fourth quarter. So
they stopped. Well, they full stopped playing. They just said, yeah, figure it out. I guarantee you guys can't score enough points. Even with us, we could turn our backs and stop trying and you still won't score enough points. And they didn't. They got close, but they didn't. So, yeah, I think it'll be snack time for the 49ers defense on Philly. The one positive note for Philadelphia is the offensive line and Jalen Hurts' mobility. He can get out of that pocket pretty quickly, and hopefully these wide receivers can start getting open for him when he does have to roll out or escape the pocket and make plays with his legs. I still do think, though, that the one big offseason move for Dynasty owners, hopefully you're able to make it, is moving on from Miles Sanders. With a mobile quarterback in Jalen Hurts and their need, in my opinion, is going to be throwing the football and a limited usage, you know, between the tackles. The PPR upside's there probably for Miles Sanders. I just don't think there's much of a floor on the ground. He'll have big games, game scripts that work in his favor, but I think where his price got was it was just an easy sell. And now his price is getting a little bit more palatable, I think. Still in the sell book for me. I have no interest in having him. I probably wouldn't even be starting him unless my running backs were that bad.
All right, that should wrap us up for this evening. Any last words, Dan, before we head into week dose?
Looking forward to week two. Hopefully people stay healthy. Hopefully everybody won all of their matchups. And, yeah, looking forward.
Oh, and I'm sad about Judy. Very sad.
Yeah, that's tough. It's only like a month, though, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, he should be all right.
All righty, that should wrap us up. We'll talk to you guys next week. Kadosh! I don't even know what that means, speaking of getting vertical.
I got vertical with your transition.